Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week in more than 70 countries around the world and on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the 2004 World Silver Survey right after this message. You know, the Civil Rights Act of 1868 was enacted by Congress to be the citizen's policeman against police and governmental abuse. Randy Weaver was paid over $1 million for the wrongful deaths of his wife and son. Right now, the police in Los Angeles are bracing for hundreds of civil rights lawsuits in its latest round of Rodney King-style police misconduct. And we hear a lot through radio, TV, and the press when these sensational government-citizen confrontations are being acted out. But we hear very little or nothing about the government paying for these abuses under the Civil Rights Act, which is called Title 42, Section 1983. Now, there are more than 14 million of these civil rights crimes committed by police and government officials at every level of government every year. Now, what would you do if you were victimized by the FBI, the IRS, or some other governmental agency who takes your property, arrests you, jails you, or beats you, and you were innocent? You know, there has to be a remedy for every wrong. Now, whether you've been a victim or you think that you may be a victim of government wrongdoing, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now and order yours, the number 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email, send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, tonight's report comes from the Money Changer. Remember, that's Franklin Sanders, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, the zip code 38486. Or you can call direct. The number is 888-218-9226. I'll give you that address and number again a time or two as we go through tonight's report, the 2004 World Silver Survey. Now, the World Silver Survey, assembled by Gold Fields Mineral Services, it's called GFMS in London, England. The Silver Institute's annual Silver Survey is the silver industry's benchmark study of supply and demand. Whenever we read an impressive and elaborate report like the Silver Institute's annual Silver Survey, compiled by a world-class research company, we tend to accept it at face value. But wait a minute, maybe we ought to look under the covers here a little bit. Maybe it's a good idea to peel off the makeup and look at what's underneath. At very best, any fundamental study of a commodity used by millions of consumers around the world will contain figures that are estimates or conjectures at worst, and it can mislead terribly. Now, Gold Fields Mineral Services doesn't let me in on their methodology, but I can guess how they might arrive at their figures because for 2 years I worked in supply in the U.S. Army. And probably all the figures include some facts. But the fact is, then, it's corrected by estimating how much of the market the fact really covers. Then they apply some creative math, and it probably works something like this. First of all, we figure out, or we believe that, all of our sources together have reported 107.3 million ounces of scrap silver. So number two, we figure that we get reports from about 56% of the market, which is of course just a pure guess. We don't know if we're getting reports from 42% or 68% of the market, but we pick a number and we estimate that we're getting 56% of the market to report to us. Therefore, to correct our figure for what we think is the total market out there. We divide 107.3 million ounces by 56%, and we come up with 191.6 million ounces. Do you get that? We don't divide it, we actually multiply it. Now, we entered that figure on our table as silver scrap for 2004. Now, the hard figures are generated in some such fashion. And when it comes, however, to categories where nobody needs to report anything, such as implied disinvestment, or somebody reports something, such as hedging, or they lie whenever they report, that's government and its government agencies reporting their official sales, why then it's anybody's guess what those numbers really are, or even if they exist at all. So, how does the GFMS figure supply and demand? And like a balance sheet, so that the debit side of the ledger, supply, has to match the credit side of the ledger, demand. But how can you and I achieve this balance? How can we know when all of the figures are estimates and some figures are missing? After all, we can see that they're fudging, can't we? Now, when the figures just don't jive, then they just make up a figure and stick it in there. It's called a balance figure. It's an accounting term. And since obviously more silver was used this year than was produced, it had to come from somewhere, right? So, that implies that somebody disinvested, or maybe some hedgers we don't know about might have bought more hedges than we have reported in our numbers. Or maybe the tooth fairy worked overtime, but we can't put in the tooth fairy line, can we? So plainly, I'm guessing about GFMS methods and poking fun at their expense, and certainly their technique is much more refined than I've made it out. But I'm sure that they have hundreds or thousands of data collection points, and one thing's for sure, they collect more information about silver and silver use and silver sales and silver inventories than I do. But in the end, the bottom line is, even a refined, educated guess is still just that, boys and girls. It's a guess. So let's take a look at the World Silver Survey. So why do we want to burn our time on this silver survey? So you ask me, well, why waste any time pondering the yearly silver survey if the figures are not perfectly reliable? Well, for one thing, they're the only figures that we have. I mean, that's where reality's at. It's the only numbers we've got other than the CPMs generated about the same way. Now, for another thing, if they're collected by the same people every year using the same methods, then whether they capture the absolute numbers really doesn't matter. And why is that? Well, because their data will reflect the trends in the market, and that's about as good as anybody can get. It certainly suffices for our purposes here, and what we're going to try to do is to figure out the gold-silver price ratio, and then come to a conclusion and make a determination as to whether we should be heavier in silver or heavier in gold. Now, Franklin Sanders is the only newsletter writer, economic newsletter writer, that I know of that's not only heavy in silver, but advocates a heavy silver portfolio because of the profit potential that silver offers over gold. Now, gold is going to be very profitable. I mean, you can just go out and buy gold, stick it in a hole in the ground today, and you're going to make money. We don't know whether or not you're going to make purchasing power, but we do know that the president right now, the United States economy, is inflating the economy by $4.5 trillion. I mean, they're just pumping money out just as fast as they can. The president, in 4 years, has not vetoed a single spending bill. There's no savings of money involved in this administration. I mean, we're not concerned about whether or not the State Department overspends its budget by $1 billion or $2 billion or $4 billion. In fact, we would prefer that they do so that we can make it up with borrowed money and get more money out there into circulation, stimulate the economy so that we can get reelected in the fall. That's the objective. Now, for you and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife sitting over here, we have to figure out a way that we can protect ourselves from the inevitable inflation that's coming from this. Now, I personally think we're going into hyperinflation, the inflation of the late 1970s and early 80s at 20%. I think is going to be the good old days when we stop and look at the numbers, because in 1987, the total amount of M1, M2, and M3, all the money in circulation, checks, cash, credit cards, etc., was $3.5 trillion. Today it's $9 trillion, on its way to $13.5 trillion by the end of 2005. Now, that's the American economy today. So, gold is at $400 an ounce today. Silver's at $634. By the end of next year, gold will be higher than $400, and so will silver. How much higher? I don't know. You see, gold was $800 an ounce back in 1980, and silver $50 an ounce. But that was abnormally high. It was unrealistically high. It had overshot its bounds. What was the correct amount? I don't know. I just know that that was high, and today it's low. Now, purchasing power. That's what we're really concerned about here, is how do we preserve our purchasing power? So if I want to save $1,000 and I put it in the bank, inflation is running at 7% a year here in 2004. Those are the official government numbers. 7%. Now, if we take 7% inflation and we get our paycheck on Friday and it's $1,000 and we stick it in the bank at 1% interest, next year we're going to have $1,010, aren't we? Well, I'm not so sure that that $1,010 is going to help me very much, because the inflation rate at 7% is going to cost me $70, so take 70 from 1,010 and I got $960 left on our $940. So I'm going to have $940 worth of purchasing power. And I want to protect that, so I think I'll buy gold. So if I buy gold and the price of gold goes from $400, and let's say it goes up to $450, well then I've made a, let's see, that's one out of nine. That's about a, 12%, isn't it? 10% increase in my purchasing power. I have to have an increase of 7% just to maintain my purchasing power. So if we take, 7% there, I got to make $28. It's got to be at least $428 just to break even. So if it goes up to $450, well, then I've made a little bit, haven't I? And I would guesstimate that gold will hit $450 here in the year 2004. We still have another 5 months to go. And I'm pretty sure it's going to make $428. Now, it went down, remember, this year. It went down from $430 down to about $370 or $75 or $80 or so. And now it's back up to $400, and it's still edging up a little bit. And we're kind of watching that apprehensively, aren't we? Well, now, if we were to buy silver, would that silver be worth more money? Would it be of greater value to us? Would the silver increase in its value in relationship to gold more, higher, or faster than gold is going to appreciate over a bank deposit that pays 1 or 1.5 or 2% interest? And the answer to that, we believe, is an absolute yes, it will. In fact, we think it's going to move up by at least 3.71%, nearly four times as much. So that if you invested $100,000 worth of your paper assets into silver as opposed to gold, you'd make 3.71 times as much profit. Hang on. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, Leviticus 19:19 tells us, "You shall not sow your field with mingled seed." Hybrid seed and genetically modified organisms are a crime, and that's because they violate the law of God. And a study from Cornell University tells us that an increasingly popular commercial corn, genetically engineered to produce a bacterial toxin to protect it against corn pests, has an unwanted side effect. Its pollen kills monarch butterflies and butterfly larvae in laboratory tests. So the questions that Cornell left unanswered are even more telling. What else does it kill? Surely butterflies aren't the only unintended victims here. Poisons, after all, aren't too picky, are they? Does it cause mutations? And if so, what plants, animals, or insects are affected by these mutations? And when do you know if you're eating this GMO product? Is it in your grits? Is it in your cornbread? We know it turned up in Taco Bell tortillas. And if it's in a food product, will it be labeled as containing genetically modified organisms and also known as GMOs? Will the stores pull those products from the shelves like they did with the tortillas after they got caught, of course? Or will they just ignore the problem and look the other way? You know, so far, government, the Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration, and the multinational seed, petrochemical, and food processing corporations have totally ignored critics of the agricultural biotech who want the government to require labeling and labeling that food as being GMO. Well, in this battle between your health and safety and the financial interests of the multinational, the seed and the food processing companies, you lose unless you have your own hybrid, or non-hybrid, I should say, non-hybrid open-pollinated seed that are not genetically modified. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And my $100,000 on 25 acres or less class is also available on compact disc. It's available for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Franklin Sanders, the money changer. You can order a copy. I recommend that you call Franklin at this number. It's 888-218-9226, and just ask him to send you a free sample copy of the money changer. Take a look at it and see if you don't agree with me that this is a unique money or monetary newsletter. I can't tell you what the price is, I don't know. But why don't you call and ask? I'm looking at the July 2004 edition. That number again, 888-218-9226. Whatever the price is, it's half. It's cheap at double the price. Even if you had to pay twice what he's going to charge you for it, and I don't even know what it is. That's how highly I value the money changer. In fact, I use this newsletter to do programs on the air. Probably one or two programs a month come out of the money changer. But there's so much more in it that you miss every month. And this is a dynamite article, about five pages of material, dealing with this thing of the connection, that is, the ratio between silver and gold, and the profit margin that's available without speculating, without charging interest or usury, without violating those economic laws of God, without violating the statutes that Moses set down, thou shalt not steal, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. That the money changer is a must, in my view. Now, let's take a look here. If we looked at all of our sources together, and we put them all together, and I'm reading now from the Money Changer newsletter, and they're citing from a British newsletter or a British company that specializes in keeping track of the use of silver worldwide. Not just the United States, but every country in the world. Where the scrap silver comes from, how much there is, how much silver is on deposit with the various commodity banks, how much paper is out there, and what the shortfall is. Their data tells us about the market backdrop against which silver is playing out its bull market. For silver and gold, fundamentals don't really make a bull or a bear market. Not that they're unimportant, just that they don't change very quickly. And for a strong rise in any commodity, it's only necessary that the fundamentals not be stacked against us. Now, the little changes in the fundamentals year to year don't amount to much, but huge deficits, such as our budget deficit or our accounts, our balance of payments deficits, accumulating year after year, they form what we call the trend line, and they argue that silver is underpriced. And therefore, at some point, a sudden upward adjustment is going to occur. We call that a bull market. Payday is coming someday. We just don't know when. And the longer it is delayed, the nearer it comes, and the higher the rewards are going to be. And for that reason, I recommend that serious silver investors keep up with the annual World Silver Survey. Readers can order the World Silver Survey for 2004. It's $195 U.S. from www.silverinstitute.org. That's www.silverinstitute.org. Or you can write to Silver Institute, 1200 G Street Northwest, Suite 800, Washington, D.C., 20005. Again, that's Silver Institute, 1200 G Street Northwest, Suite 800, Washington, D.C., 20005. Now, I'm one of those serious players in the silver market. I have known for many years that silver is underpriced. The correct ratio in the Earth's crust is 17 to 1. There's 17 times more silver in the Earth's crust than there is gold. Well, that tells you then that silver should be 3.71 times the price that it is today. Let me give you an illustration. The price of gold today is about $400. So if you take 400 and divide that by $6.34, it comes out to 63. All right, so the price of silver should be higher than it is today, because the ratio, divide 63 by 17, and it comes out to 3.71. So either silver should be 3.71 times $6.34, or $23.52 an ounce, or the price of gold should be $107 an ounce. Either the price of gold is too high, or the price of silver is too low. Now, when we take a look at how much silver is in the warehouse, and we take a look at how much gold is actually in the warehouse, in the pipeline, we find that gold has been oversold by 15 times, and silver has been oversold double that, 30 to 1 or 30 times. So if we took all of the world's silver production, it's going to take 30 years to pay off all the paper that's out there claiming it, and it's going to take 15 years to mine enough gold to pay off all of the gold paper that's out there claiming it. You see, most people prefer paper over the physical. So let's talk about that for a minute. I hold the physical. So when I take $634 and I send it off to my gold broker and I say, send me 100 ounces of silver, I take the physical possession of the silver, and then I got to go bury it in a hole in the ground someplace, or put it in a vault, or put it in a safe place. Now, most people don't want to do that, so they buy a piece of paper, and it says, you have on deposit here at the ABC Commodity Warehouse 100 ounces of silver. Unfortunately, that commodity warehouse took your money, spent it, had a good time, And they have done that 30 times over so that if two people were to ask for their silver at the same time, they wouldn't have enough there to pay it off. So, there's an old adage that says, short bankers are hung from tall trees. And I don't know whether we're going to hang these thieves or not, but that's exactly what's been going on. And it's been going on for a long time, more than 10 years, probably more like about 15 years. Governments have been intervening in the silver and gold market. It's not a free market. It's not a supply and demand market. It's highly manipulated. And the price of gold is actually lower than it should be, and the price of silver is actually way lower than it should be. So it gives us an opportunity, those of us that are long on silver in our portfolios, to speculate on the difference between the price of gold and silver in its relationship to one another, which should be 17 to 1, but today is at 63 to 1. And I don't have to violate any laws. I don't have to gamble or speculate. I have physical possession of the product itself, so I'm never going to lose, but I have a lot to gain. Let's see if we can do that. Because you see, if I were to spend $100,000 today on silver, let's just test it, put a few numbers together for you. $100,000 worth of silver is going to weigh about 16,000 ounces. That's about 1,000 pounds. That's pretty heavy. 1,000 pounds of silver for $100,000. Now, the same $100,000 invested in gold only weighs 16 pounds. Now, think of that. 16 pounds versus 1,000 pounds. So, it doesn't take a Rhodes Scholar to figure out that 1,000 pounds of silver at 60 pounds to a 5-gallon bucket takes about 16 buckets. You got to have a place to put it. But that $100,000 worth of silver times 3.71 would be worth $371,000, or 3.71 times my original investment. And I have physical possession of it. Now, I have an old-timey student here who's a commodity broker, and he explained it like this. You could go out and buy a silver future for 10 cents on the dollar. So let's say you're going to buy this $100,000 silver future, and you only have to put up 10% or $10,000. If the price of silver were to go from $6.34 to $7 an ounce, well, then your $100,000 has increased in value, and you can cash it in for the full amount. So you only invested $10,000, but your $100,000 buying silver at $6.34 has gained, you know, 66 cents an ounce. So you've got 15,000, well, it's about 16,000 ounces. So let's just take 16,000 ounces times 66 cents. You made $10,560 profit. And you never took possession of the silver. You only invested $10,000, and then you made $10,560 profit. You did better than that. You got the whole $100,000, so subtract your $10,000 out of it, and you made $90,000 profit because you didn't have to put up the full amount. Now, a guy like George Gordon has to put up the full $100,000 amount because I don't hedge and I don't buy futures. I don't gamble. I don't violate the Mosaic Law, so I recommend you pay the full amount. Because if you were to buy that same $100,000 future, and you put up your $10,000 and the price drops from $6.34 to $6, you've got to come up with the 34 cents an ounce times the 100,000 ounces. That's called your margin call. And if you don't have that cash, you lose your $10,000. So you're better off to stay with physicals. Hang on, we'll tell you more. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour and the Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, biotech beans, chemical corn, frankenfish, and the pesticide potato. That's what's on the menu down at your local neighborhood supermarket. And I'm concerned that this technology is a serious threat to your health, to traditionally bred open-pollinated seeds, and to the environment, to the farmers that grow them. Listen to this quotation. It comes from the Chicago Tribune. Here's what they had to say about it. Quote, "We're being exposed to one of the largest uncontrolled experiments in history, and in less than 5 years, these companies have flooded the marketplace with thousands of untested and unlabeled products containing foreign genetic material. These genetically modified organisms pose severe and several real dangers because they have been engineered to create novel proteins that retard spoilage, produce their own pesticides against insects, or allow the plants to tolerate larger and larger doses of weed killers," unquote. And what is really scary is that it's not from Tom Clancy's latest thriller. These seeds are already a major part of the U.S. corn and soybean crops. Now, what happens if one of these so-called suicide genes, which prevents seed saving, goes haywire and destroys the entire U.S. corn crop, or turns out that genetically modified rice kills people, or what if we find out that it causes genetic mutations or birth defects in people like thalidomide did back in the 1950s? Well, I don't want to take that risk, and I don't want to be a guinea pig in this kind of an ill-advised experiment. And that's why I'm offering this $100,000 on 25-acre program, so that you'll have an opportunity to make a determination or a choice. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about gold and silver coin, an article from the Money Changer. Remember, that's Franklin Sanders, the Money Changer, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, the zip code 38486. What I'd suggest is call this toll-free number, 888-218-9226, and ask for a free sample copy. Once you start there, you can't lose anything. I recommend the Money Changer because Franklin Sanders has his pulse, or I should say his finger on the pulse of the silver and gold exchange rates. I don't know if I should use the word exchange rate so much as the price differential between silver at $6.34 an ounce and gold at $400 an ounce. He's the only guy in America that I know of, maybe the only guy in the world, that is promoting silver. Now, I've been doing that privately with my students for the last 15 years, since the silver peak of 1980-81. Let's see what the real drive wheel in the monetary demand is. What really drives gold and silver is not fundamental, but monetary demand, and all of those fundamental uses, industrial, jewelry, photography, and so on, are low-order uses, inefficient when compared to monetary use. Think of it this way. Let's suppose you had 50 pounds of silver. Would you be more efficient? Would you be more useful? Would you be more versatile if you took that silver to make a kitchen sink and then wash your dishes in it, or to coin and spend the money? You probably get the point. You see, if silver ever gets cheap enough that you can make your kitchen sinks out of it, you'll know that it's underpriced. Now, monetary demand wants silver as money, silver as silver. And being quite specific, it cannot be satisfied by anything else except to the extent that gold and silver substitute for one another. So it drives the price very strongly, and it drives it very quickly. Monetary demand becomes especially strong when the public begins to view silver and gold as alternatives to fiat currency. And what makes the public look at the metals that way? Well, monetary mismanagement Monetary mismanagement. You know, like that central bank that specializes in fiat currency, the Federal Reserve. And usually that mismanagement results in inflation. People get scared that their fiat currency will lose all of its value, or enough of its value that they want to protect it. So they flee into silver and gold. Now, monetary demand is enhanced when a period of price suppression precedes it. And we've been experiencing a decade of price suppression and manipulation. Almost without exception, governments do the suppressing and manipulation. Just ponder, for instance, the United States back in the early 1960s. Taking advantage of the U.S. dollar's position as the world's reserve currency under the Bretton Woods system, the United States exported its inflation around the world. The more the world, notably the French under de Gaulle, began to doubt the dollar and convert their dollars into gold, the more the U.S. struggled to manipulate gold's price. First, through Blarney and BS, and then the covert market intervention, and then finally, through outright sales. In other words, the U.S. government suppressed the price and did a big favor for gold investors. The government kept the price low for a long time. In the process, they could keep on buying gold on the cheap before the price rose. And at about the same time, the U.S. government suppressed silver's price. Now, back in 1959, silver began to rise from the artificial low of 90 cents an ounce where the United States had unofficially fixed the price. I say unofficially because, you see, the Coinage Act of 1792, officially, by statute, and unchangeably fixed the price of silver at $1.29 per ounce. Now, as both industrial and coinage demanded and demand from the new vending machines and the use of money and the price of silver rose with it, the government then stepped in to suppress silver's price. And it succeeded. It succeeded. And then finally, it drove the price from 90 cents an ounce to $50 an ounce. Now, the very best thing that can happen to a silver bull, and I'm one of those, is for government to suppress the price, which it has. That virtually guarantees that at some point there's going to be a bull market explosion of and by itself, just like we saw in 1979 and 80. Now, when you add the inevitable monetary mismanagement to that price suppression, which we've all seen over the last 13 years, then you have a solid silver chance of a lifetime. The explosion will occur, we just don't know when. Today it appears that central banks have been suppressing gold's price for at least the last 10 years and probably have been suppressing silver just about as long. Working through private intermediaries like bullion banks doesn't change the effect at all. You see, suppressing the price makes the eventual explosion a whole lot bigger than it would have been without the suppression. But back to the fundamentals. Because monetary demand really drives silver, bull markets more than any other demand, we want to see that appear. Generally, the fundamentals do not change, and they don't change very quickly, or they don't change by very large amounts. For example, even if the price of silver jumped from $6 to $12 an ounce tomorrow morning, miners will still need 12 to 24 months to reopen closed primary mines. You see, the small changes in fundamentals year to year won't drive prices explosively, but they do tell us what sort of foundation is being laid for this bull market, and that's why we watch these fundamentals. Now, by the way, whenever or wherever you see these charts that give data before 1990, you need to be careful. The GFMS separates this data before and after 1990 because the 1990 data, that is, data prior to 1990, does not contain as much data as it does after 1990, and that's notably because in Eastern Europe, under the Soviet Union, the Soviet bloc, there weren't any reports coming in. We didn't know how much silver they had or what they were using it for. So I'm giving you the data anyway for comparison's sake, but not for the absolute value. Let's take a look at the summary. Here's the major points from this year's silver summary. The total supply grew 1.1% in 2003. So in 2003, the supply of silver being mined from four sources. Let me give you the four sources here. The primary source of silver, which accounts for 30% of the production of silver, comes from silver mines. We call that primary because, like the Sunshine Mine up in northern Idaho, that's what they mine there, silver. Silver from a silver mine. But that's not where most of the silver comes from, because lead and zinc mining, the lead and zinc mines, produce 30% of the annual supply of silver worldwide as a byproduct of lead and zinc mining. So there's as much silver coming out of lead and zinc mines as there is out of the primary silver mines. And then there's a third source. 26% comes from copper mining. So you take copper mining worldwide, they produce a quarter of the world's silver production as a byproduct. Remember, they're not looking for silver, they're looking for copper. And when they smelt the copper down, they've got this byproduct called silver. And then gold mines, primary gold mines, mining gold, they produce 13% of the world's silver as a byproduct. So here's 55, 65, 68, two-thirds of the world's silver is a byproduct. We're not even after silver. It's a byproduct. Only 30% comes from silver mines. Now, if the price of silver were to jump from $6 to $12 tomorrow, it is not going to add any silver at all in the first 12 to 24 months. Picture it. Copper mines are not going to double the production of copper so that they can double the production of silver. Remember, it's a byproduct. Two-thirds of the silver produced in the world is a byproduct. Only 30% comes from primary production of silver mines. So, even if we needed more silver in the morning, we're 12 to 24 months out from increasing silver production worldwide. Now, the total supply grew in 2003 by a paltry 1.1%. There's no move to produce more silver. Mine production dropped 0.1%. Get that? Mine production, that's the primary source, actually dropped 0.1%. Scrap supply rose 2.6%, and the net official sector sales rose a hefty 35%. Now get this. In the year 2003, they sold 35% more silver than they did in 2002. Mine production grew by 1%. That is, the total supply, I should say, grew by 1%, and mine production actually dropped by 0.1%. Scrap supply rose by 2.5%. Where did that extra 30% come from? I mean, you know, we consume 30% more than we produced, salvaged, or scrapped out. Well, the 2004 World Silver Survey implied net disinvestment reached 10.4 million ounces. Total fabrication demand rose 1.6%. Jewelry and silverware bounced back. Industrial demand grew 2.9%. Photographic demand dropped again by nearly 5%. And coinage jumped nearly 8%. Now, hang on, and we'll take a little break here, and we'll be back, and we'll analyze these numbers, and I'll show you where silver's headed. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, tonight's report on silver, the 2004 World Silver Survey. I'm George Gordon, your host, right after this. You know, during the 1970s, an obscure black college professor at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, while working on a grant, he developed a unique marketing plan for agricultural products. The plan was aimed at poor, rural, black landowners in the South who owned small acreages. Now, the goal was to keep these landowners on the land by producing produce for sale to the public at retail and to generate an income that would support a family on these small acreages. The Whatley program was so successful that it became known as the Whatley program, how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. The guy's name was Booker T. Whatley. Now there are more than 4,000 of these small family enterprises operating in every state in the United States. Now, the law school has taken this Whatley program and added the 15 agricultural laws of the Bible and 17 financial laws of the Scripture so that you can practice all of the laws of the United States, your state, and the Scripture and make a good living in the process. Make a good living for your family and yourself at the same time. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how this program works and how to put it into a scriptural perspective, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary. It's a commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now, the number 417-273-4967, and order your free General Law CD. Now, the $100,000 class is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and send me an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. You got to do it right now before you forget, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about silver. Why should you buy silver in place of gold? Well, the answer is, if you're a speculator and a gambler at heart, and you want to see if you can make a profit and do the profit without gambling and speculation, that's kind of where I'm at. I've adopted and practiced the Mosaic Law, which prohibits usury and interest, prohibits speculation, prohibits gambling, and so I said, well, gee, could I take advantage of the free market? And the answer is, you bet you can. And that's because the government has manipulated the prices of gold and silver for so long for the benefit of the banks, the multinational corporations, and for the advocates and the corporations that use paper money, that now the price of gold and silver are undervalued, being suppressed, and the ratio between silver and gold are at 63-1, and the correct marketplace differential should be 17-1. And you can take advantage of that 17-1 without making any risk, without taking any risk. And that's where I advocate for my students, that there's no point in speculation. For instance, let's suppose that you've got $10,000. And you want to invest $10,000 in metal. Normal people would buy $10,000 in stock in a silver or gold mining company. If the stock goes up, you make money. If the stock goes down, you lose. Or you could invest $10,000 in some kind of paper debenture. You could buy $10,000 worth of silver and let somebody else store it for you, or $10,000 worth of gold. Or you could buy futures, just put 10% down and speculate on the price. Where is it going? Those are risks that investors take, but I contend that those are risks that are beyond the scriptural limitations, and for most of us, we don't have the money to risk. So what we advocate is that you take physical possession of the silver. That is, when you buy $1,000 worth of silver, you take possession of $1,000 worth of silver, or $1,000 worth of gold, and you put it someplace. And you need to put it someplace where it's safe, where you know where it's located, nobody else does. You see, what's been going on for the last 10 years is that while people were buying silver certificates, in other words, you go to the commodity market and you buy $10,000 worth of silver, you get a piece of paper that tells you that you've got some silver on deposit. The problem with that is that they've sold 30 times more silver than they have silver in the bank. That's where the old adage is, short bankers are hung from tall trees. That's why we advocate very strongly that you always take physical possession. Now, there's a second kicker. Many of these silver and gold brokers are trying to sell you speculation in numismatic coins. They want to sell you a 1 ounce coin for $10,000. But if you ever have to melt that coin down, that $10,000 1864 gold coin in MS 62 or 63 condition is going to sell for whatever the spot market price is, less the cost of sandage. I don't see any way to make money or make a profit doing that. But listen to this. What if you took your money and you invested it in silver, and the price of silver and gold moves from 63 back to its historical or its normal 17 to 1, which it did twice in the 20th century and is poised to do now with the collapse of the U.S. economy? Just like it did in 1979. You remember when silver was priced at about, maybe 90 cents to a dollar, dollar and a quarter. I think in 1979 it might have been up to $2 or $3. And it just escalated in a period of a few months from $2 or $3 up to $50 an ounce. The price of gold, I think, was around $75 at that time, and it escalated to $800 an ounce. So just take 800, divide that by 50, and it was at 16 to 1. 16 to 1, which is just about where it's supposed to be. Now, that's called the marketplace. That's where the real world is, and the price of silver and gold will naturally seek their own equilibrium. They always do. They always have for thousands of years. And no matter how much we manipulate markets, there's an ultimate day of reckoning. Now, here's the worst-case scenario. Let's suppose that the price stays at 63 to 1. You're not hurt any. You've still got physical possession of the gold or silver. The guy that gets hurt is the guy who has the piece of paper that says, my silver is in the warehouse, and when he tries to get his silver, it's not there. It's gone. You can't have 30 people claiming the same piece of silver. I mean, you know, that's just where common sense is. Now, let's take a look at the silver supply, because in the chart, silver supply, I've arranged the categories to move upwards from more solid to less solid to hardly solid at all to utterly imaginary. And we can assume that the hard data on mine production and silver scrap fairly accurately and broadly cover the marketplace. All right, now let's take a moment and analyze that. In the numbers here, they're telling us that the total fabrication demand rose 1.6% to 859.2 million ounces. Jewelry and silverware bounced back by 4.1% to 276.7 million ounces. Industrial demand grew 2.9% to 351.2 million ounces. Now let's watch this. What if it isn't 351.2 million ounces? What if it's 451 or 251? For our purposes, it's irrelevant. We know that the industrial demand for silver grew in the year 2003 by 2.9% over what it was in 2002. Whether the numbers are exactly correct or not, which we took on at the opening of this story, we don't need to be concerned about. What we're concerned about is the trend line. Where are we going? What's happening is the use and the demand for silver is going up year after year and has been for the last 15 years. And the production of silver is going down or remaining static. That's the trend lines. Now, we add to that the machinations of the Federal Reserve and the natural thieves in the commodity markets by selling more paper, more claim checks on the amount of silver that's available. And now you have an explosive situation. So for those of us that have the physical possession of the silver, we're not going to get screwed out of it because somebody in the commodity warehouse took our money and doesn't have our silver there. And the price is going to skyrocket at some point in time because the American dollar, the U.S. dollar, is going down in value in relationship to all of the currencies around the world. It's now down to around 85. And that means that the euro, which used to be, just a year ago, at about a dollar, and the dollar was at about a dollar, now it takes about a dollar and a quarter to buy one of those euros. So the euro has gone up in value, the dollar's gone down in value. And that's the trend around the world because, you see, America is living on debt. Our federal budget deficit is $500 billion, or pushing that number, and our balance of payments deficit is $500 billion or more. That's $1 trillion a year, boys and girls, and there's only $800 billion worldwide if you could borrow every dollar, only for the use of the United States in financing those two deficits alone. That doesn't count consumer debt, that doesn't count state, county, and city debts, or all the rest of the people in the world that need to borrow money to build houses and do things with. That, boys and girls, is an explosive situation. We've never seen anything like this. To say that the world's economy is out of balance is an understatement by a magnitude of about 100. And yet, it's holding together. But you can readily see the fabric of it is falling apart. Now, along comes Franklin Sanders, and he says, now listen, here's a great opportunity, because instead of buying gold, assuming you're in metals and you're buying gold, what I've discovered is that I can take 10 ounces or, yeah, about, well, let's take 25 ounces of gold that right now is worth about $10,000. If you took that 25 ounces of gold and you converted that into silver, you're going to get $10,000. Just mark that in. And then divide that by $6.34. And you can get 1,577 ounces of silver. Now let's suppose that the price of gold doubles to $800. And the price of silver goes up and it comes to its 17-to-1 ratio, which is where at some point in time it's going to go. When it goes to that 17-to-1 ratio, you're going to make 3.71 times as much. Your silver will be worth 5,851 units compared to 2 units of gold. In other words, you'll be trading your silver back into gold, and you'll get 3.71 times more gold for the silver. I would avoid the paper. I mean, after all, if the paper money goes south on us, what are we going to do with it? You only trade silver and gold in for enough paper to buy rutabagas and goods and services that you need during the time that you need it. You don't go out and buy this stuff. You don't take your gold and silver and buy paper and sit on the paper and watch it devalue, do you? But now, if you put your pencil to the paper, you can see where there's an advantage in being a net heavy user or saver of silver over gold. Now let's take a break here, and we'll have to come back tomorrow night, same time, same station, take it up right here. And that's what we'll do. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School, just go to my webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Well, there's a signal that says my time is up. I got to leave it right there. We'll take this subject up again tomorrow night, right here, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.